you are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance, the Zany Mystic. Tonight's guest is Jodeen Turner. Jodeen has been interested in writing since she was a young girl and encouraged by her teachers to pursue it as a career. In the early 1990s, she made several trips to the United Kingdom and Ireland, where she visited many of the ancient sites. In 1994, she moved to the United Kingdom to focus on writing her craft. While living in Glastonbury, England, the ancient Isle of Avalon, Jodeen published Journey Through the Mists of Avalon, a book of shamanic visions and poetry. She then began writing The Goddess of the Stars and the Sea Trilogy. These visionary novels tell the story of spiritual evolution, culminating in the present-day shift of the ages. The novels carry keys to embodying the sacred feminine and are an initiatory journey into the mysteries of the goddess. First in the trilogy is the highly acclaimed The Awakening, Rebirth of Atlantis, followed by the award-winning The Keys to Remember. Carry On the Flame is soon to be released. Jodeen presently lives in Oregon with her husband, Christopher, and cat Morgane. Jodeen is also a therapist and a consecrated priestess. So let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Jodeen. How are you?
I'm fine, Lance. Thank you.
Good. Well, you're quite a prolific author. What prompted you to write about these subjects?
Well, back in about 1994, I went through a serious illness and found the opportunity to be able to move to Glastonbury, England, which I had visited off and on since about the early 80s when I first read The Mists of Avalon. And when I went to Glastonbury, England, I was very, very inspired by a couple of incidents that happened there to be in touch with the goddess that's very inherent in that sacred land. And I was sitting by the well, the Chalice Well, which is one of the holy wells in Glastonbury, England, just writing in my journal, and the steward of the well walked by and said, you know, I wish some of these people that wrote in their journals would publish their work. And I thought, aha. Yeah. So I published the first book with a small press in Glastonbury, England. And being opening to that, to the goddess in that way, I came back to America in about 1996 and was just inspired by my experiences in Glastonbury to write about them. I wouldn't say that it's a channeled writing. I would say it's definitely not channeled. It's divine inspiration by the goddess. And the trilogy was set out at that time. I knew it would be three books, and it would be about this goddess of the stars and the sea.
Wow. Now, did you have some kind of spiritual awakening during this time, or have you always been, since a child, have you always been empathic or psychic or visionary?
I would say all three since a child.
No.
And it didn't come to fruition until adulthood, though. I was very empathic and very visionary. And, you know, actually at about age 18, 19, I had a vision. I can't even recall all of the details, but it was the feeling that I'd be participating in some new big shift for a new civilization. I had no idea what that meant at that time.
Yeah. Now, have you studied the idea that, you know, we are going through some kind of transformational period ending sometime around the Mayan calendar end date?
Well, as you and your listeners know, there's a big opportunity for a global healing and consciousness evolution taking place right now. I never studied it. I received intimations of it in meditations, and just had a feeling that something big was approaching, and then I began to study, which is a cool way to do it.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, just you get the feeling and the intuition, and then your studies back up what you've already, and validate what you've already felt intuitively.
Absolutely. It's good validation, yes.
Yeah. Also, a lot of people describe, know about, or have more knowledge of past lives in Atlantis, and many of my guests even say that there are thousands of people here who lived at that time who have returned and are returning in order to complete the cycles and do some karmic balancing and finish what was started there. Do you have any inclination? Do you think you might have had a lifetime or two as a priestess in Atlantis, or?
You know, that could possibly be true. When I was writing the first book, The Awakening, Rebirth of Atlantis, a lot of people would ask me that question. Do you have a past life in Atlantis? And, you know, it's probably true that I did. I don't know. I do know that I pulled on a lot of inner inspiration for that. And again, it was the kind of thing where what came out in the book, I would afterwards read about Atlantis and go, aha.
Yeah.
It's very familiar. I wrote about that in my book, but I never studied it beforehand. So there's probably a collective touching into on some level as well as a personal.
Absolutely. I think we all have the capability of touching and tapping into that.
Yes.
It's interesting that the final days of Atlantis are marked by deceit, lust, and greed, as it says on the back jacket of your book.
Yes.
And do you find that there are, obviously you do, find parallels between the Atlantis, the society of Atlantis, and our own today?
Yes, absolutely.
If anything, we've taken it far beyond anything Atlantis ever accomplished.
Yes, yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that.
Yeah,
definitely. There's the degeneration of the society, of the priesthood, of the religion, of the government, the weather turbulence, all the things that we're seeing today. There's parallels, absolute parallels.
Oh, yeah. Do you feel that we're energetically in a time when we're going to continue to see, upheavals? And because during Atlantis, supposedly, there were increasing warnings of and portents of things to come. Obviously, we can't go on like we have been going because the planet simply can't sustain us. As we are right now.
Right. I think there's a universal law that's happening here, destruction before regeneration.
Yeah.
And I think of it like the storm before the calm, rather than the calm before the storm that we usually talk about. And I think that things have to fall apart first.
Yeah.
And then they have the potential and the opportunity for us to grow and evolve and put them back together in a better way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's a parable about the lotus flower, the Zen saying about the lotus flower that grows out of the swamps, the pure and spotless lotus flower.
Yes.
And it seems that, we are like that flower, and we're now in the swamps. Some of us are trudging through it, though, on the front lines, and it's not always a comfortable situation.
Yes, and I think there's real opportunity in that, too. A lot of what I talk about in the novels has to do with, just as you were saying, being in that muddy swamp. There's been a tendency for centuries, for eons, for us to focus on our spirituality of transcendence, of going up and out of the messy humanness and the imperfections that we have living in this physicality. And I think one of the messages and one of the ways to traverse this shift of the ages, one of its most important messages, is it's not about going up and out of your body and up and out of the messiness. It's about transforming it instead and touching into that divinity that's inherent in physicality. And that divinity is the sacred feminine.
Absolutely. It seems that the religions, the predominantly male element has pretty much written the divine feminine out of history. And sadly, because it's you know, I believe that that probably is the true source, and that it's been suppressed for so long. But it seems that it's starting to reveal itself now, or starting to prepare for these revelations. What can you tell us about the divine feminine and the goddess energies?
Yes, when I describe this, I'm going to use the word God, but you can use the word creator or source or whatever it is that you align with.
Okay.
I'm comfortable using the word God. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about the sacred feminine, and when she's talked about and brought forth in the novels, it's talking about that divinity within, the divinity in matter. And you probably know that matter derives from the word mother. The divine mother is God or creator or the source in form, in physicality, God in form. And I kind of look at it like divinity expresses itself on a spectrum from spirit to matter. And an analogy of that might be thinking about water and how water can be solid ice or liquid or vaporous steam, but it's still water. And divinity is still divinity, whether it's expressed as physicality or the unseen realm of the spirit. So the divine feminine for me is the divinity in matter, God in form, and it's where human and divine love merge and express through our choices in everyday life. So it's very practical too. It's the feminine face of God, the beloved consort, God and goddess, divine masculine, divine feminine. Love is basically the bottom line.
Absolutely. Another topic that that you bring into your writings is the idea of a great shift. And, you know, that's one of the things that we talk about in, I have a Yahoo group, then we bring a lot of information into it about that subject, because that's the one that seems to be predominantly on our minds. How do you sense that or feel that intuitively?
That the shift is happening?
Yeah.
I used to say that, or used to feel that we were on the threshold, kind of anticipating this shift of the ages. But now I really feel we're in the middle of it. We're in it.
Yeah.
And so if I'm hearing your question, you're saying, what is my perspective on it?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. I think the shift for me, and in my novels this is expressed also, the sacred feminine I call the goddess of the stars and the sea in the novels. And I think the shift has to do with the reemergence of this sacred feminine and the spirituality of embodied love and sacred union. I think it's a very potent way to show us how to enter into this new way of being that we have the opportunity to enter into. And she's the energy and power of divine love. She's the reemergence, because she's been here all along, the sacred feminine. I think we're beginning to see and hear about this reemergence of the sacred feminine all over. There's just so much written about her now. There's studies even in colleges and universities. And in the midst of the degeneration we see in our world that we were talking about, you know, the degeneration of the political system, of the destabilization of the economy, the degeneration of the Catholic Church, for example, and what's happening there, we're also seeing more and more examples of the principles of sacred feminine, such as cooperation, people working with, instead of dominating the environment and the animals on the planet, the idea of power with versus power over. I think we're seeing more examples of connectedness and embodiment and beginning to really find our authority within ourselves versus authority outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing more and more of win-win versus win-lose. You know, and there's, we see a lot of tragedy and chaos in our environment, but these are starting to come to the forefront too. The power and the wisdom of the heart, of receptivity. And again, that shift of focus to transformation within rather than transcendence up and out. And these are her energies, the goddess's energies, the energies of the sacred feminine.
Hmm. Now, when you went to Glastonbury, to the United Kingdom and Ireland, mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, was it a mystical experience for you to be over there, and could you sense the energies and pick up things from, you know, times past?
You know, I think that everybody has different places on the planet that they resonate with. Maybe it's from past lives, maybe it's just their soul resonance, but I definitely had an affinity for Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, and yes, absolutely. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Glastonbury, I had been there 5 times, I think, before I finally moved there. I felt like I wanted to bend over and kiss the earth. That's how much I love that land.
Wow.
And it really speaks to me. It really, I had a lot of visions which were new to me, some automatic writings which, you know, I'm thinking, what the heck is happening here? And I came back to the States and talked to people and tried to figure out what was going on. And I think it was a spiritual, I guess what it's called, a spiritual emergency, with kind of a crack you over the head waking up call.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a definite affinity. There's so many sites that are profoundly sacred on, you know, in Ireland and the UK. And, you know, many people and many writings talk about the UK, especially Glastonbury or the Isle of Avalon, as being the new Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not in specific reference to Christianity per se, but the new paradise, the new heaven on earth, like a prototype for that.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense the return of any particular force that, in other words, some kind of being that's going to return and crystallize these energies, or is that something that is unique to religions and the old paradigms?
Yeah, I think the return is us, and bringing forth the love inherent within us. It is, I feel, divine love. Our love is the most potent alchemical transformative power that there is. You know, I'm sure that many religions do talk about a particular person being the crystallization of this new paradigm shift, but I think it's us. I think it's every one of us. I think during these shifts, particularly this one that we're in right now, they call people to do great things in their ordinary lives. It could be something as great as Mother Teresa or simple, but equally great as choosing love and compassion for yourself and others in each moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does seem to be a trend, at least for me. I notice it growing in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And now you lived there for quite a few years, but you've moved back to California, is that true?
Moved to California. My husband and I are kind of, sometimes we think we're gypsies. We're in Oregon right now, outside of Ashland.
Oh, okay. That's quite a beautiful area, too.
It is.
Yeah, I'm in the Sierra Nevada foothills in El Dorado County.
Oh, right. Yes.
So
I'm
not
very
too far
well.
Away. There's a gold country is nearby, and, you know, Angel Camp and all kinds of mystical spots.
Yes, I lived in Nevada City for a while. So
this area.
Yes.
It seems like this is an area that has a kind of a special energy in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what that's going, you know, what will come about from it, but the radio station is also based in a place called Paradise, oddly enough.
Oh.
So I take all of that as a good omen.
Yes, oddly enough, or synchronistically enough.
Exactly.
Lovely.
Now, you also do work as a therapist?
Yes. I, for many years, was a therapist. I haven't actively done that for a while, other than to make some CDs for guided imagery for pre-surgery that the local hospital uses here.
Oh, okay.
But here I'm going to acknowledge someone that has greatly enriched my feelings and views about the sacred feminine, the sacred masculine, sacred union, embodied love. And I'm going to bring this up. It'll come back to answering your question. It's a little circular way of coming back. I want to acknowledge Tiziana de Rovera, who brought forth a spirituality of embodied love, which I really resonated with, of course, because that's what my novels talked about. And this system is called Adorata. And, you know, my views on masculine and feminine energies and the inner healing that needs to take place there to provide sacred union within were very much enriched by her teachings.
Huh.
Yes, and so right now I will go back to being a counselor and a therapist, using that system probably in about 6 months or so. I need to finish some training and finish the last of my novels, and then I'll go back to being working as a counselor again.
Ah.
But it'll have much more of a spiritual counseling focus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you see in people as one of the biggest stumbling blocks to aligning with their soul purpose or spiritual path?
Yeah, probably the 18 inches from their head to their heart. I think what happens, seriously, I think what happens is, again, this whole idea that much of our spirituality, much of our Western civilization has been focused on leave the suffering, go up and out to a spirituality that is very masculine energy, but a wounded masculine energy-oriented, and have left the body behind and denigrated it, even demonized it, you know, and that comes out in the suppression of the feminine that we've seen over the centuries. And when you go up and out of your suffering, your pain, your anger, your sadness, what happens is you leave all those wounded shadows behind where they run amok and can cause a lot of destructive patterns in your life.
Uh-huh.
And you're happy and in bliss up in the ethers, but not taking care of the physicality and the divinity in matter. So I think that is a big problem, and a lot of that, you know, as I talk about it, or not talk about, but express in story form in the novels, takes place because there's a disharmony between the inner masculine and feminine also.
Mm.
And that, and you know, that disharmony within, of course, is reflected in our outer systems of spirituality and our outer philosophies and the way we think about things and the way we live our lives in our Western civilization.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem like it's very important to learn how to balance the both sides,
mm-hmm.
the masculine and the feminine, and it's a lifelong process, you know.
Yes, it can be a lifelong process. And, you know, again, I think when we move into this new paradigm, you know, it's taking people from an old way of living and being, the old paradigm, and helping them to move to deeper awareness and consciousness and into the new paradigm. And for me, and what is talked about in the novels, this paradigm is embodied love. It's open hearts. It's keeping your heart open even amidst your pain and your sorrow and your anger and your grief. And, you know, this is I believe this, and I also live this and have learned this. My husband and I have been married 13 years, and we went through a little rough period just a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were walking along the beach and talking about things, and I was just so spitting mad. And there came a point where I had to decide, am I going to just constrict and close down? What am I going to do? And I actually heard that divine feminine voice inside me say to me, are you willing to be vulnerable? are you willing to keep your heart open? And my first response was, heck no, no way. But I finally, you know, surrendered and agreed to that, and I was able to still be mad and angry and hurt and have an open heart. And that was a turning point for me and for the evolving relationship with my beloved husband.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting, very interesting. Do you notice people around you, friends and acquaintances and just people that you run into in the normal course of your life, are also having upheavals in their relationships?
Yes.
Or is that just something that's not happening at all?
Yeah, no, of course it is. You know, it's part of being human, isn't it? It's part of our, you know, as I said before, our messy humanness.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and embracing it all.
Yeah.
I think we're really called to relate in a different way right now.
Yeah, oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And not everybody that's together is necessarily meant to walk this journey all the way to the finish line, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Since there is no finish line, you know, it's a continuum of some sort. But everybody that's in our lives, of course, is important and has a place and a reason, and we learn things. But I hear a lot from people that their partners are going in a different direction, and they're either not spiritual or they are spiritual, and the family is and the family isn't, and, you know, it's creating quite a bit of havoc, this awakening process in people's lives.
Yes, I think one of the problems that we have, an old paradigm kind of viewpoint, is that in order to be spiritual, you have to be very serene and very calm. And to me, when you embrace your physicality, you embrace all of your experience.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, if there's moments where you're angry or upset or rattled or agitated, that can be embraced in your heart alongside the serenity that's inherently in your heart. It's not any better or any worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's some of the subtle nuances about the reemergence of the sacred feminine, is that there is not this separation between good emotions and bad emotions. If you hold them in your heart, it's like an alchemical vessel. What happens in the novels to the characters and what I've experienced in my life is holding all the emotions in my heart and then having my heart held in the heart of divinity, of the Divine Mother. And, you know, that's where the alchemical changes can take place. When you hold both, it's the opportunity for something new and even more beautiful to be born and expressed.
Mm.
But it's loving those parts that we don't want to love. And we've heard this bit of wisdom before, but it's really holding them in your heart and loving them, because that's what's going to transform them.
Huh. Well, it's interesting that you should say that, because it seems like I've been going through something very similar to what you're describing, and other people seem to relay similar experiences, that there's a tumultuous energy of upheaval and negativity and outbursts and various other things, and I know that I have to move into kind of an self-observation mode to keep from self-destructing in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you that the heart is the only place where you can really live comfortably and where these things can be healed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, observing and, I want to say the word embracing, but there's a better, more practical word. It's just holding it all. And again, you know, we see a lot of what we've been conditioned to think of as spiritual or saintly or whatever. And, it, you know, it's that very calm picture. Well, that, as you mentioned just a few moments ago, it's a journey, and that's not going to happen in life. Life is messy.
That's right, yes.
That's just not going to happen. And to know that if you can practice to receive and hold more and more love, divine love and human love, then those kinds of things just untwist themselves. They dissolve, all of that agitation can dissolve at some point. And even if it doesn't, you just hold it in your heart anyway. It's alchemy. And, you know, as we're shifting and changing and evolving, it's like that alchemical transformation process. And in alchemy, you've got this big cauldron that you start with, and all the crap comes to the surface. And that's a good thing. What's happening is it's coming to the surface to be dealt with. And that's probably a lot of what you're talking about, relationships being, you know, agitated now, and people feeling that, you know, there's generally more stress and chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, with the financial crises that have happened already and are on the horizon, because I don't see that as anything that's going to end soon. If anything, it seems to be that something that will probably escalate in quite an unexpected ways. I think we'll be coming to grips with a lot of other messy things too.
Mhm. Yeah, and that's, you know, at the beginning when we first began to chat, you know, it really is death before rebirth, destruction before regeneration, and that's a very what we call, I'm going to say the word dark goddess, but dark does not mean evil. It means death before rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
It's going into that space where things fall apart so they can be remade again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the energy of it. And that's part of it. That's why, you know, when I see a lot of what's happening, it's not surprising. And it is an opportunity. It's an opportunity, as we spoke about, for people to grow and receive more of this love and be able to sustain it more and more. And I think eventually with, you know, receiving this love of the divine feminine, healing the inner masculine and inner feminine, having those pieces harmonized, we're going to see, you know, more changes in our physical structure.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Mm-hmm.
What? How do you see that coming about?
Well, I think, you know, as we touch more and more and connect more and more with the divinity and matter, with the sacred feminine, with the goddess, it gives us the opportunity to, she is love, she's divine love, and that's the substance of creation. And as we get in touch more and more with that and allow it to emerge from within us and to be a part of our lives, I think that that's going to change us physically. Once, you know, we touch into the divinity within matter, then there can be that real sacred union between the divine masculine and the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, I think our bodies are going to change a little bit. I think they're going to vibrate in a different way, and there's going to be a shift into a more perfected body.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with that totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that will come about, but it does seem that the energies that are manifesting will have to be sufficiently high in relation to us, divinity and matter, that to create that kind of move or shift.
Sufficiently high or sufficiently deep.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the sacred feminine is the depth, the infinitely within.
Mm.
And that's the piece that has been missing and unbalanced. And that's the piece that is inherently married to the infinite vastness. I mean, we're getting pretty conceptual here. But,
yeah,
you know, that's the piece that has to have the sacred union. And to bring it down to a real practical level, you know, we have, as I've said, the masculine and feminine within us too. And when those pieces, those wounded pieces, can be matured and healed through the power of love, which is the sacred feminine, then there is the sacred marriage, the sacred union within us too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just, you know, in our spirituality and in our religions. It happens within us too. And it's all one and the same anyway. Does that make sense?
It kind of does. I wouldn't mind if you clarified that a little bit more.
Yeah, I knew you needed to ask more. it was a little heady there. So let's try to. What would be your question then?
Well, okay, the sacred marriage between.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fill in the rest of that.
Okay, well, let's start on the real practical. And this, you know, happens in the novels that I wrote. This is the kind of process that happens with the characters, and that's why I call the novels a sort of a mystery school initiation, because the reader's invited to go along with the process. And what happens is, you know, we have the inner masculine and feminine. We all have it within us, and we've probably heard the terms yin-yang before. So, you know, that's what it is. It's the principles of, for the feminine, of receptivity, of being rather than doing, of inner guidance. And for the masculine, it's the generous action, the doing. And you can kind of think of it like the inner feminine is the rose and the masculine is the trellis. It's the support. So the inner feminine gives the guidance, and if it's listened to and received by the inner masculine, then he can take that and support that inner guidance and give it the action to carry it out in the world. For example, when I get inner guidance about my novels, I listen within, I get married with that creative muse and all that creative juice, and I listen, and when it comes up, that's my inner feminine talking to me. So I have to listen to it. The masculine, if he'll listen, will then take it, and I'll sit down at the computer and I'll write.
Oh.
So it's the actual carrying out of what is inspired within me.
Well, that's an interesting way to view it. I haven't quite thought of it like that before.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the problems that can happen is if your inner masculine doesn't listen to the guidance within, then, you know, the guidance gets suppressed and stifled and pushed under, and it's not listened to. It can get rageful.
Mm-hmm.
The inner feminine can just feel the rage of not being listened to. And if the masculine feels that rage of that inner feminine, it can respond by being really constrictive and really rigid and tightly controlled, and everything has to be just so, and there's no room for listening anymore.
Ooh, that sounds like a very dangerous place to be.
Yeah, and we all have that within us, you know,
yeah,
to varying degrees. Those are just, that's just an example of how they work together.
Huh.
But that's the kind of harmony that, you know, needs to be addressed. And how to address it is through tapping into, connecting with, communing with that sacred feminine, which is divine love. Again, it's the substance of creation, is divine love.
Mm-hmm.
And by tapping into that, it's a transforming power, just tapping into it and radiating it into those parts that are wounded in and of itself is one of the most potent practices we can do.
Hmm.
To heal that inner feminine and inner masculine imbalance.
Are there various techniques for doing that in the mystery schools, or because I mean you mentioned that as a powerful tool.
Yeah.
How do people go about working through that process and actually making that happen?
You know, I think there's a lot of new techniques, new ideas that are coming to the forefront now that have a similar thread. And that similar thread is what I call the way of the heart or embodied love. And what you do there is some of the things that you can do is listen to and trust your inner voice again. It's been suppressed for so long. We've never been trained to listen to it. And to open and receive the love of the sacred feminine, and you listen for her through your heart. She speaks to you through your heart. You know, and one of the ways to do that, you can develop an awareness through your body by paying attention to the sensations of your body, and because it brings you back to your body. And the goddess or the sacred feminine is the divinity inherent in the body. So just coming back to your body again and again can help you connect with her. And one of the things I mentioned before is to really work at keeping our hearts open even when we're feeling what a lot of people call negative feelings, which I don't even like using that word. And that's probably one of the most important things, is to hold those feelings in love and use the love of the sacred feminine, infuse those feelings whenever you're rattled or upset or stressed. Tap into your heart and ask the sacred feminine to infuse those feelings with her love. And it is, as I've mentioned, you know, it's one of the most potent alchemical transformational powers, is that divine love.
And is the sacred feminine also related to the intuitive and empathic side of us?
That would be, yes. The sacred feminine, you know, is a principle. I'm sure I don't need to say this, but it's not a gender role. It's not a societal role. It's a principle like the yin and yang. So intuition, yes, absolutely, is a feminine quality, yes. And that receptivity, when I used the word receptivity before, receiving that inner guidance, and one of the ways you do that is through intuition.
Right, right. And I noticed for myself that when I get that kind of guidance, there's often an associated feeling in my body goes with that intuitive kind of knowingness. It's kind of a soft voice, and then it correlates with some part of my body that is activated that kind of validates that this is a message to listen to.
Absolutely.
You know, or it's a certain type of message or a certain energy, you know, that's flowing, that's there to inform me. So I always listen, you know, whenever I am aware of it.
Bravo. That's wonderful. That,
yeah.
And having it tie into your body is a great validation for that, yes.
Yeah, I know when I don't listen to those inner guides and team, whatever you want to call it, that things just go a little bit awry. And by listening and tuning into those things and following the it's not like a suggestion, it's like a direction or it's almost like a compass point that kind of indicates going in a certain direction, and it always leads to some kind of form of a wonderful experience.
Yes.
Synchronous.
Yes. And, you know, that happens from these wonderful synchronous sacred experiences, and it happens in the mundane, too, where, when you, for example, you get up in the morning, and oftentimes we may have our to-do list or what we know we need to accomplish that day.
Yeah.
And sometimes just tapping in to and receiving the inner guidance about the mundane, too.
Well,
is important.
Right. Yeah. Well, now, what is your third book going to be about? Your first two takes us through, maybe you could just give us an outline of the journey that happens, some of the transformations.
Yes, the first book was during the time of Atlantis, during its, up to its demise and its cataclysmic downfall, and the character in that book was a priestess of the goddess of the stars and the sea, and the goddess of the stars and the sea is seen as a goddess who helps humanity through the transition times of critical junctures in human evolution, such as we're experiencing today, such as we experienced in Atlantis. So with the first book, the priestess was, her main job was bringing the seed of the ancient Atlantean wisdom spiritual traditions safely out of Atlantis and into the world. And one of her main lessons was to learn about inner spiritual authority versus the authority of the conditioned, the religious system of her day. She had to learn the strength to connect with her own inner voice and inner knowing versus what the world or the status quo or conformity demanded. And so she found her power, her inner spiritual power.
Wonderful.
Yes. And then the second book took place at another critical juncture for humanity, about 300 AD, at the inception of the Middle Ages, when the divine feminine, I mean, it had been suppressed for a while, but when it really went into blatant, outright demonization and suppression. And this priestess of the goddess of the stars and the sea had to learn to keep her heart open in the midst of some pretty terrible suffering. She had a lot of personal losses and some very abusive mentors in her spiritual path. And so she, in order to embrace her destiny and purpose in the world, she had to keep her heart open to learn that it was only through embracing and moving through her pain and her anger and letting her heart break wide open that she could truly heal and find her true inner peace and strength. So in other words, to fully experience love, you have to feel your pain. And she preserved the ancient wisdom of the goddess of the stars and the sea for the future as humans entered the Dark Ages.
That would have been somewhere around the time of the Council of Nicaea, wouldn't it?
Exactly. It was.
Okay.
Yep.
What a tragic moment that was.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
They dug a deep
hole
and
souls,
yeah, buried the divine feminine in a cement box.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And very sad. That's interesting that you know, that you would pick that as a time when she has to carry the seed on into the future. And I'm guessing your next book would be bringing it up to current times.
You're good. Absolutely. Yes, it is.
And
it's
just that we're in, or, you know, we have an opportunity or a fork in the road, as the many prophecies say, that we have the potential to go in a very self-destructive direction, and we can also choose the higher, which is love-based.
Absolutely. Yes. And, you know, that's why I chose... Well, it was kind of chosen for me.
Right.
In your creativity, that these time periods, I was just drawn to place the novels in these time periods. And, you know, while they're the journey of the sacred feminine, it's also the journey of sacred union. And, you know, they are three critical junctures in human history.
Oh, yeah.
And the novels are like a mystery school. I think I mentioned this before.
Yes,
because they're embedded with practical teachings that provide opportunity for personal and global healing and change on a spiritual level. And that's the beautiful thing about writing visionary fiction, which is a style of storytelling that has the spiritual teachings and wisdom teachings embedded in the story, similar to the Celtic bard. You know, where the bards were the class of religious order in the Celtic system of spirituality, and they were trained storytellers. They trained for years and years, and they used their stories to not only entertain and to pass on their tradition orally, but to pass on spiritual wisdom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, visionary fiction uses story in much the same way. It'll embed spiritual teachings, not religious teachings, but spiritual teachings. And in an entertaining story form, and it's sort of like a spiritual quest inside a story. And like the quest for the Holy Grail, there's a spiritual gem to be found, and the reader is invited to find that gem through the experiences of the characters.
I like that.
Yeah. The Celts had a term for a spiritual quest, too, and they called it the Imram. The Imrams were the physical travels to exotic places at the edge of the known world. But they were also a sort of a mythical and archetypal voyage of the soul in search for spiritual union. So visionary fiction is like that Imram. And again, the reader's invited to live the experiences of the novel's characters and to quest for and find the spiritual gem. So it's visionary fiction uses story as a sort of gateway to metaphysical experience and spiritual insights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it kind of gets under your skin without you necessarily knowing it.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a subtle form of teaching without being dogmatic or dry.
Without being dogmatic, dry, or standing on a soapbox. Or
yeah, right, exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I love it, I love it. Well, I'm reading your book now, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly. I'm just savoring it and enjoying it slowly. Yeah, visionary fiction is something that I have to read a little more slowly because I have to really, you know, grasp what I'm reading. You can't just skim through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I want to get the gems. And I used to study English and all that, and I'm used to, you know, finding the spiritual thread in the story. So I'm taking my time with your book.
Oh.
And enjoying the ride so far.
Oh, I love feedback. I'm glad to hear that. And if you want to tell me at some point what's most impacted you, I'd love to hear that.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I can get through this one and the next one, then I can have you back and we can have a really long discussion and we'll get into the characters and stuff.
Okay.
And by then other people will have had a chance to read the books too.
Mm.
And then they can join us and or not. And you know, we'll delve into the archetypes and mythology and the, you know, the things that connect all of this together, which is what we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that we're headed into, and we are in, both destructive and magical times at the same time.
Yes.
And in order to experience the magic, as you say so frequently, that we must stay in our hearts. We must
mm-hmm.
reside there, and we must hold those elements that are chaotic or discordant. We must hold them within the heart for healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
so,
and in the heart, the goddess, the sacred feminine, speaks through our hearts. So
yes,
it's there. It's there,
yes.
To be had, to be received. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any premonitions for this coming few years that we have in front of us?
No, a psychic I am not. You know,
right.
My vision is the embodied love vision.
Okay.
Definitely embodied love. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the radical shift.
Yes, yes, yes. I'd have to agree with you. And I'm starting to see this shift occur with people emphasizing there was a big push in the New Age movement to, you know, leave your body. We're from the stars. You know, we don't belong here. Let's get off the planet quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get over this. And now it's you know, people are talking about actually grounding themselves more fully with the earth and moving with her and bringing the higher energies or aligning with the higher energies to bring heaven to earth. And I suspect it's all around us anyway, that we're just not aware of it.
Right. And, you know, and it's not to say that transcendence is a bad thing. It's just been an imbalanced thing.
Right.
So it's, you know, not always about going higher. It's about going deeper.
Deeper.
That place within us that she resides. And it's, you know, that where the waves and the particles from when forms comes out of formlessness.
Mm.
That's where she is in the creation,
wow.
The substance of creation, which is love.
Wow. Interesting. Well, we have a few minutes left. I want you to make sure that you tell our listeners where your website is and let them know how they can find you. And also, if you have any, you know, parting words of wisdom for our listeners, feel free to share those now.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, my website is jodineturner.com, J-O-D-I-N-E, Turner, T-U-R-N-E-R.com.
Easy enough.
Yeah, very simple. Parting words of wisdom. I would say that divine love is the most potent alchemical transformative power. And the radical shift is about transformation through love, divine love, feeling where the agitation is in your body, sending that love to that place rather than transcending up and out of it. That will heal. That will give us an ability to receive and sustain and give out more and more love. And I think that's where the big shift is headed. And it's subtle nuances sometimes, but it's a radical change in how we view things and how we are, how we be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And your book is, your first book in the trilogy is called The Awakening, Rebirth of Atlantis.
The Awakening, Rebirth of Atlantis, yes.
Wonderful. What was the name of the second book again?
The Keys to Remember.
Wonderful. And, of course, we are in the remembering process, which
remembering
is
remembering.
Remembering.
You got it.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. And the third one will be called Carry on the Flame, and it'll be out probably within the next year.
Oh, wonderful. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. All right, Jodine. Well, I certainly appreciate you being on the show, and thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and insights and wisdom and love with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Lance.
You're very welcome. And I look forward to reading your third book, and best of luck with that venture.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Blessings.
Good night to all the listeners. Good night, Jodine, and thanks again.